Hello, respected viewers. It's George from Ireland. So welcome back to my channel. What do you think of the new camera position? You know, you used to be sort of above me or whatever, or I was above it. It's down here. Maybe better. So, yes, coming back to the Russo-Ukrainian conflict, it's been going on over 2 years. It's a full-blown war. Obviously, been going on more like 10 years since the Russian invasion of the Crimean Peninsula. But today marked a first, and that was the first time that Ukraine struck 1,200 kilometers into Russia with drone strikes in Tatarstan. Tatarstan is this region astride the River Volga, as well to the east of Moscow, only conquered by the Russians in the late 16th century under Ivan Grozny, or Ivan the Terrible. And indeed, the president of Tatarstan was honored to have met me several years ago when I worked for him. But that's another story. Minikhanov, Rustam Minikhanov, and he really is mini, because he's about 5'3". Putin chooses people who are much shorter than himself because of his Napoleon complex. And indeed, the sidekicks of Minikhanov were even shorter than him. So whoever Putin picks next, it'll be someone who is diminutive. I'm not joking. Like, that's why he selected Dmitry Medvedev to be the placeholder 2008 to 2012, someone of very modest stature. So the target of these drone strikes was this industrial complex, and I hope I mispronounced this correctly, Nizhnekamsk. And there's an oil refinery there and a military drone factory in Alabuga, a special economic zone. So that is quite shocking that they could have hit so far from the front line. And apparently some people were wounded. It was obviously regrettable. I think all of them, a lot of students are pressurized to work part-time in these factories, similarly manufacturing factories. So even some school children aged 15 are working there full-time, and that's counted as so-called education because of these manpower shortages. Much though Putin rails against Central Asian immigrants, 5% of workers in Russia are guest workers, mostly from the former Soviet Union. And that figure is only going to climb, partly because of the demographic death spiral. Putin's managed to get 100,000 of his men killed in Ukraine, about double that number permanently disabled. About 700,000 young men have fled the country. So, and that 5% doesn't sound that much, but in certain sectors like cleaning or agriculture or construction is way higher. So they're going to be staffing shortages in a lot of these sectors. And they pay people quite a lot to work in these factories around the clock, but they can only afford to keep that going for so long. And so where Ukraine has really won is their innovation and drone warfare. Now, Russia's got plenty of drones as well, but the Ukrainians, the drones that they manufacture, they've increased their range and accuracy enormously. They were striking in Moscow and St. Petersburg a few months ago. Now, the Ukrainians have switched their strategy. They used to buzz Sheremetyevo, Domodedovo, and Vnukovo airports in Moscow. They would shut down the airport, as in no aircraft movements, fear of a collision. And the Ukrainian drones never killed or injured a single person. Was it an unwise strategy because it had militarily no impact? On the other hand, does it demoralize the civilian population? Does it just irk them? Does it up their fighting spirit? And so I think on low level, it simply increases belligerence. But after a while, it does demoralize people. But as Ukraine's very short of munitions, surely they should save their fire for military targets. And when you're menacing a civilian airport, there's always a chance you actually bring down a civilian aircraft, and then you've killed hundreds of civilians, which is, you know, illegal, looks really bad for you. So surely they shouldn't do this. But anyway, they were lashing out partly because they were furious because their civilians have been attacked, you know, thousands of Ukrainian civilians murdered in this war by the Russian military. I use the word murdered advisedly, deliberately killed, knowing them to be civilians. This is not collateral damage. There's been some of that as well. Now, I can't say that no Russian civilians have been killed, been murdered in this war, as in purposefully killed, knowing him or her to be a civilian. If it has happened, I would think it's far, far fewer. You know, even if war crimes are committed on the Ukrainian side, none of that detracts one iota from Ukraine's legitimacy as a sovereign state. What Russia's manufacturing in these drone factories, they are additions of the Iranian Shahid drones. So they're not terribly good, but they are fairly cheap. They've got a lot of them. What was I going to say? So they have to work. Some parents work there under threat of their children being expelled from school if they don't. And some people said that they work in dreadful conditions, and you know, they get starvation rations and so on. But there's huge pressure on local chiefs, shall I call them that, to up production. So Rustam Minikhanov, he's been in charge about 20 years there. He's actually no spring chicken. He must be coming up for 70. Anyway, so Minikhanov has chosen to minimize this, saying he had really had no effect on production, stuff like that. Well, he would say that, wouldn't he? But even that's true, one day the Ukrainians will get lucky and it will cause devastation to one of these factories, blowing a lot of the machinery, a lot of the explosives that are going to be stored there, maybe kill the factory workers. It'd be more ethical to do it in the middle of the night and kill fewer people. Some of these factories work in 24 hours. One thing, if you kill factory workers, well, then they can't work again, and also have a dissuasive effect on those who are considering working these places. But again, you've got to try and minimize civilian casualties. But if you're really into gamesmanship and say, don't care about ethics, would that help you win the war? It would, actually. Anyway, so we go on. So Russia, what countermeasures can they take? So it's very worrying for them. But should the Ukrainians be saving more of their fire for actually the front line? But what they've decided to do is they're going to try and solve the problem at source, because shooting down the drones as they come in, that's difficult. The countermeasures are expensive. So you solve it at source by destroying the factory that manufactures them in the first instance. Of course, Russia's very big and they can put them further and further east. But there's talk in Ukraine of developing a drone that can go 3,000 kilometers. But the further it goes, you know, the more difficult that is, the more fuel it requires, the more chance they're going to be shot down somewhere along the way. Another thing is, Russia could move its factories even to the Pacific coast. Now, that's difficult for them because then you have the hardly any population there. Where are you going to get the workers, and have to transport things much further to the front line, which is time, which is money, which is fuel as well. So force them further and further back. But yeah, it's definitely a coup for the Ukrainians, showing that nothing within a 1,200 kilometer radius of the Ukrainian front line is safe from now on. And all those Russian warships in Novorossiysk and so on the eastern coast of the Black Sea, they are too in the danger zone. But if I were the Ukrainians, I wonder whether it's actually even worth going off the Russian Black Sea fleet, as it does almost nothing. It scarcely leaves port. It's just not a threat at the moment. So maybe they should save their fire for, you know, these military manufacturing zones and the front line and so on. Russia today said that they've gained 400 square kilometers so far in 2024. Now, that's probably a major exaggeration, but even if it were true, it's negligible, because bear in mind, Ukraine is a country of over 700,000 square kilometers. So it's taken them 3 months to gain that much. And you can do the maths at this rate of advance, how long would it take before they conquer the whole country? And how many casualties have been the first 3 months? Probably in the tens of thousands. When I say casualties, I don't just mean deaths. For every one death, there's about three wounded. But obviously there could come a breakthrough when they start to take it far more rapidly than that. We shall see towards the end if Ukrainian morale plummets. So Ukraine at the moment doesn't have a chance. They need to get way, way more. One of the rays of hope on the horizon for the Ukrainians is that Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, he said he's trying to find a way to fund the Ukrainians, that $60 billion package they want. Could they make it a loan rather than a grant? Remember, there were loans to the United Kingdom from the USA in the Second World War. The UK didn't pay off till 2007. So it took the UK, was it 65 years to pay it all off? And so that's a possibility. And the loan could be written off later. We will see. And link it to border security. Biden might make some deal on that one, which would help his re-election chances as well, actually, considering there's rising illegal immigration. But yeah, unless the Ukrainians get a lot more funding, a lot more armaments, then I'm afraid the balance is still tipping towards Russia. The Ukrainians can be gallant, they can be ingenious, but you know, you can't beat numbers at some point. You could win if you're outnumbered 2-1. I don't just mean like by soldiers, but munitions and so on, or 3-1, or 4-1, or 5-1. But there comes a point when it's just too many. And the Ukrainians said they're sort of outgunned 6-1 in terms of munitions. So they are not supermen. And that's why they need more munitions, really. Anyway, thank you for watching my channel. Please make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Toodle pip, everyone.